Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Montana's most productive coal mine, how nonprofits are weathering the pandemic, and how remote learning will work amid coronavirus-related school closures. It's Tuesday, March 31st. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montanans are being asked to report census data online or by phone, even without receiving a specialized ID code to begin the process. A press release from the Montana Department of Commerce yesterday says the state's response remains critical as census field operations across the U.S. are being suspended due to COVID-19. Normally, residents would use a 12-digit census ID delivered through the mail to access an online questionnaire. However, in Montana, more than 35% of homes do not receive mail at a traditional household address. The Census Bureau does not mail to post office boxes or rural route addresses, and communication with these households will not begin until door-to-door operations commence. Those without an ID have the option of starting the online questionnaire or calling in their response. Census reporting affects how local voting districts are shaped and whether or not Montana will have more representation in Congress. According to census data, Montana receives an estimated $2 billion in federal funds each year that support schools, healthcare, and highways, along with other public works. The state gave Montana's most productive coal mine the go-ahead to expand its mining capacity, effectively extending the mine's life to 2031. Kayla DeRoche reports the expansion continues despite the current owner's debt to the state.
The Montana Department of Environmental Quality on Friday signed off on Navajo Transitional Energy Company's plan to extract 72 million more tons of coal from the existing property at Spring Creek Mine in Bighorn County. The expansion, which DEQ says the previous owner requested in 2013, means the mine would disturb an additional 1,000 acres or so within the existing permit boundary. DEQ Coal Permit Coordinator Bob Smith says the agency's recent decision marks the completion of its environmental review.
It's mostly around what the reclamation requirements would be.
Smith says the Spring Creek mine yields between 12 and 18 million tons of coal annually, so this permit revision would extend the mine's life by about 4 years. He says the mine was responsible for roughly 33% of Montana's total coal yield in 2019. Last year, Antec took over the permit from Spring Creek Coal LLC, a subsidiary of the bankrupt Cloud Peak Energy. Antec has not yet paid the reclamation bond Cloud Peak Energy left behind, and the Montana Department of Revenue says Antec still owes state taxes on the property. DEQ's decision comes after a question of tribal sovereign immunity caused the mine to close for a day, while the state figured out if it could hold Antec to state environmental law. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
With Montana News, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Nikki Ouellette. As of 8 p.m. Monday, Montana is reporting 177 known cases of the COVID-19 illness caused by the novel coronavirus.
Today, we want to talk about that number and what it represents, because we've been getting a lot of questions about testing and what those numbers tell us.
Some healthcare providers say in an ideal world, anyone with symptoms or risk factors could get tested. Think of South Korea, how they did diagnostic testing.
But there's not enough tests in the United States to do that. Instead, providers here have to choose who gets tested and who doesn't.
We've heard from the state's top medical officer that treatment doesn't really change whether someone tests positive for COVID-19 or not. It's more about helping public health officials see where the disease might be spreading so they can put precautionary measures like quarantines in place. Corin, is there enough testing happening in Montana to understand where the coronavirus is?
I spoke with Dr. Jeff Jaden. He's an infectious disease specialist at Kalispell Regional Healthcare. He and other doctors I've talked with in the state say Montana needs to expand its ability to test. He says if everyone with symptoms got a test, we'd have a much better picture than we do now of how many people the virus is impacting. But at the same time, he and others say they wouldn't recommend testing everyone, so people who don't have symptoms at this point.
When you test people that don't have symptoms and they're negative at that point in time, we don't know if hours, days later and things that they convert. And so I think it potentially would give them maybe a false sense that they may not be at risk at that point.
So Jaden doesn't think all million Montanans should be tested, but does he think enough testing is happening for us to really know what COVID is up to?
Jaden and other doctors I've talked with, they say no. And it's not just tests, but material needed to collect tests, like swabs, that are in short supply. When all of this started in Montana just over 2 weeks ago, when the first case was discovered, Governor Steve Bullock said the state had stockpiled 200 tests. And this is at a time when the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was doing a lot more testing before it shifted to the states doing more of that role. And Bullock said at the time that the state would be able to get more tests if needed. Like so many other things these days, that situation has changed very quickly. And as we're recording this, more than 4,400 tests have been done in Montana. And the New York Times reported yesterday that Bullock told President Trump in a phone call that Montana doesn't have adequate testing.
So who are those limited tests being used on?
The CDC has guidelines, but federal and state health officials stress that it's up to local doctors to decide who is and isn't getting tested. And those people usually fall into a few groups. People this virus could really impact and send to the hospital, that's often older people, or people who have some kind of underlying condition, potentially respiratory, that makes them vulnerable. Also, symptomatic healthcare workers would be tested. People living in close quarters, that could be a signal case for a larger potential spread, they're sometimes tested. Think here of someone living in an assisted living center. And first responders are another group, like law enforcement, healthcare workers. They're more often given tests as well.
If a person does test positive, what happens then?
Health officials then try to do kind of some research into that person's background. And while that patient is isolated for about 2 weeks, health officials try to learn their travel history and other people they might have come in contact with. The goal is to connect as many possible infections as possible so that those people can be self-quarantined and remove the possibility they could be in contact with other people and spread the virus even more. Gallatin County Health Officer Matt Kelly talked about contact tracing like this last week during a press conference where he announced that a healthcare worker had tested positive.
And I also want to make clear that just passing somebody in a hallway is not classified by the Centers for Disease Control as being at significant risk. What we're really talking about is significant face-to-face contact. So we're talking about patients they may have seen face-to-face, people they may have worked with on a regular basis.
Corinne, you said the state lab has processed 4,400 tests. Does that number include tests that are analyzed at private labs?
It doesn't. Another nuance here, the state lab says it runs tests within 24 to 48 hours, 7 days a week. For private labs, some officials say it could take even longer, maybe 5 to 7 days.
So with all these caveats about who's tested and how much testing is happening, what do we know about the spread of COVID-19 in Montana? The State Health Department's website updates a few times a day with this information. Is it useful?
The state's COVID-19 website tracker does give us good information about what health officials know for sure. But Dr. Jeff Jaden from Kalispell, he told me we shouldn't consider the state map a full view of COVID in Montana.
Information in that map, and I think it is very helpful in things to see that. But again, it reflects kind of what tests are being done and what tests are positive. I mean, we certainly know there's people that have mild illness that aren't being tested, or people that are asymptomatic that may have it that aren't being tested. It's probably more prevalent in Montana than we recognize by just looking at that map.
Thanks for the update, Corinne.
Thank you, Nikki.
The state of Montana confirmed two more deaths due to the coronavirus on Monday, bringing the state's total to four. The Toole County Health Department said two county residents have died. Blair Tomshek spoke on the County Health Department's Facebook page yesterday.
If you have not been identified as a close contact to a case, you can still protect yourself and your community by staying home as much as possible, by washing your hands frequently, by limiting non-essential travel. We live in a small part of Montana, but as we know, we are very intertwined with other communities.
Two earlier deaths were reported in Lincoln and Madison counties. Montana Governor Steve Bullock says he's aware of the positive tests among the senior community in Toole County and has been working to send additional resources to their healthcare system. The state of Montana was slated to take control of part of the Libby Asbestos Superfund site starting tomorrow from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. But because of the novel coronavirus pandemic, that transfer is being postponed indefinitely. Montana Public Radio's Nora Sachs explains.
Last year, EPA determined that the cleanup of residential and commercial properties from asbestos contamination in Libby and Troy was complete. The federal agency planned to transition responsibility for operating and maintaining those units of the Superfund cleanup to Montana's Department of Environmental Quality on April 1st at a public meeting. Beth Archer with EPA says since those are currently prohibited, the agencies are going to wait to do the formal handoff.
We just really want to be there for the community in person, so we're hoping that we'll be able to be out there soon, but we're just waiting as everyone is with the COVID situation as it develops.
Archer says in the meantime, EPA is working closely with DEQ to make sure that when the official transition does happen, the state will be clear on its responsibilities and able to hit the ground running. I'm Nora Sachs, Montana Public Radio.
Montana Governor Steve Bullock is ordering anyone coming into the state to self-quarantine for 14 days in an effort to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. Bullock says travel from another state or country is the most common known source of COVID-19 infections in Montana. Health officials say the virus is spreading locally in Missoula, Yellowstone, and Gallatin counties. Bullock also authorized the Montana National Guard to screen people's temperatures and potential exposure history at airports and rail stations. The quarantine applies to people already here for non-work-related travel and Montanans recently returned from out of state. It does not apply to people passing through the state on the way to somewhere else. Healthcare workers are also exempt. Recent reporting from the Montana Free Press shows long-term bookings for vacation rentals are up in certain parts of the state. Two Montana ranches have been featured in national magazines as places to, quote, ride out the coronavirus pandemic in style, end quote. Bullock's order comes after some counties issued their own two-week quarantine requirements for incoming travelers. Local health officials have asked attractions like Yellowstone and Glacier National Parks to close to limit tourist travel. Both parks are now closed to visitors. Many nonprofit organizations across Montana have canceled programs and postponed big spring fundraisers in an effort to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. Participants in a recent survey say they're concerned how the economic fallout from COVID-19 will affect them and the communities they serve. Rachel Kramer reports the new $2 trillion coronavirus response package could provide some relief.
The Lewistown Art Center is a cultural hub in central Montana. It supports 150 regional artists, hosts performances and monthly gallery exhibits, and provides classes for kids and adults. But when Governor Steve Bullock directed public schools to close March 16th to slow the spread of COVID-19, the Lewistown Art Center's director, Mary Callahan Baumstark, says the organization followed suit.
We have so many kids cycled through the building weekly, and it's just really difficult to sanitize things like clay and art supplies, so we figured we would just close down the building.
Callahan Baumstark says it's a scary time right now.
Our income was really significantly reduced in a really difficult quarter, so our offerings will probably be reduced in the coming year.
The Lewistown Art Center is one of 2,200 nonprofit employers in Montana, many of which are facing similar economic hardships. The new Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, could help eligible nonprofits weather the storm. Nonprofits with 500 or fewer employees can apply for emergency small business loans to cover payroll, health insurance premiums, facilities costs, and debt service. These loans are forgivable if the nonprofit has kept staff on the payroll between March 1st and June 30th. Larger nonprofits can apply for low-interest loans through the new Industry Stabilization Fund, and nonprofits of any size can apply for economic injury disaster loans through the Small Business Association.
We're just now looking at the CARES Act and all the SBA staff trying to understand what kind of relief is available to nonprofits.
That's Liz Moore, the executive director of the Montana Nonprofit Association.
Nonprofits generally aren't accustomed to navigating this terrain. Most of us don't have familiarity with applying for loans. And so that makes it intimidating, but you just have to get past that and assert for yourself in the same way you do with fundraising.
Over the last 2 weeks, the Montana Nonprofit Association has sent weekly surveys to gauge how nonprofits in the state are faring. Moore says the first survey, sent out shortly after the first COVID-19 cases in Montana were announced, received more than 400 responses.
So that tells you the heightened level of anxiety. And the concerns were about, you know, staffing, working from home, canceling our events, all of that. The concerns were really infrastructure concerns.
Moore says the second survey, which wrapped up on Saturday, shows a transition.
The concerns have really shifted to the mission and how are the children? That is a huge issue.
She says nearly half of the nonprofits said they expect to see an increased demand in their services. That includes Haven, the Bozeman nonprofit that serves survivors of domestic violence. Haven is still providing legal support, confidential shelter and counseling. Its survivor chat line saw a 300% increase last week. Back in Lewistown, Mary Callahan Baumstark says she and her staff at the Art Center are still staying busy despite being closed to the public. The center worked with the local Boys and Girls Club to distribute art kits to homebound kids, and it's in the process of getting an online store and exhibit space.
So that not only our community can access that kind of art and culture that they expect from us, but also we might be able to increase economic opportunity for artists in our region.
Baumstark says online sales, grants, and one of the federal relief loans may help the Art Center ride out COVID-19. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Yesterday was the first day that public schools across Montana are required to have plans in place for how they will deliver online or remote education, as well as other services. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney spoke with reporter Aaron Bolton about classes moving forward as school buildings remain closed amid the novel coronavirus pandemic.
Aaron, Governor Steve Bullock ordered K-12 public schools across the state earlier this month to create plans for how they would continue offering most of the services they do normally to educate kids in the state. Can you give us a refresher on what's in those plans?
Yeah, so the governor told school districts to outline four things in order to maintain state funding through the coronavirus outbreak, how they plan to provide online or remote learning for their general population students, as well as a specific outline of how they will work with special ed students. The plan also needs to explain how schools will provide food and other services such as counseling.
Governor Bullock gave schools just 2 weeks to get those plans in place. Did that happen?
It did, and that largely happened late last week through the weekend. A little over half of the roughly 400 school districts in the state had their plans approved by local school boards and submitted to the governor's office by early Friday, and the rest were able to get them in place before the weekend was through.
And it sounds like that's not the only news coming out this week on the education front. Montana Office of Public Instruction is saying the state has received a blanket waiver from the U.S. Department of Education to forego federal testing requirements. Is that right?
Yeah, the State Board of Public Education did its part last week in waiving state laws requiring schools to administer the federal tests for elementary, middle, and high school students, and that paved the way for OPI to request the waiver from the federal government. These tests quiz students on English, math, and some aspects of science in order to make sure they are meeting federal education standards.
So what about state standards for student achievements? How are those being handled to measure student success as, you know, we shift to this new normal of, you know, online or remote learning?
All schools in Montana are still required to demonstrate that students are meeting the state's minimum education standards, and how that's done will likely look different this year depending on how long school doors are closed. So far, that's at least until April 10th. And determining whether students are meeting state standards is something districts outlined in their plans. I spoke with Kalispell Public Schools Superintendent Mark Flatteau about this a little over a week ago. He says this has been like assembling a car as it's going down the road, but he says one of the district's goals is to direct resources to students who are already falling behind.
Certainly the kids who are currently failing high school courses that they need for graduation, we are focusing on specifically. and ensuring that those kids get the assistance and help they need in order to demonstrate proficiency, in order to demonstrate that they have earned their high school diploma based upon the rigorous standards that that we have in Kalispell.
That's interesting. He says, you know, assembling a car that's going down the road. We've seen districts scrambling to shift their entire learning platform online, which means working around students who don't already have internet access at their homes. Is there an idea for what this is going to cost for districts to set up these new systems and deliver education outside of the classroom?
I've been asking that question, and the answer largely depends on who you're talking to. I mean, local school boards are the ones who determine how money is spent or saved within the parameters of state and federal laws. So some districts already had many online tools in place, had computers and internet-enabled devices they could hand out to students. Others didn't and are spending money to buy devices to give to students, or maybe are using some flexibility within their transportation funds to reimburse families for installing internet in their homes. So a lot of this really depends on what tools districts had in place or how much reserve funding they have. However, Kirk Miller at School Administrators of Montana says by and large, this expeditious shift to online and remote learning will cost school districts more.
I think it's reasonable to assume that when you completely change your mode of delivery of educational services, that the expense of doing that, just merely in the training and the organization of being able to do what's being done, and then all of the effort out there to identify, you know, on an individual basis who has access to what, I think it's reasonable to assume that that's going to cost more money to deliver in that manner than what we currently have been doing.
But for the time being, we just don't know how much this might cost. I spoke with OPI Superintendent Elsie Arnson last week, and she said that dollar figure is likely to come out of fiscal requests during next year's legislative session.
And there is some relief coming from the federal government. What do we know about that so far?
The stimulus package passed by Congress last week does include about $13.5 billion for K-12 education nationwide. And when I spoke with a spokesperson at OPI, they said they were still crunching the numbers to find out just how much schools in Montana will get. But we should know those figures this week.
This has been a pretty hectic time for school administrators, teachers, and families. During your reporting, are you seeing any positive notes to come out of this?
Certainly more teachers and students are going to become more familiar with online learning tools this week as school gets underway for many districts, but schools are also taking surveys, answering questions about the plan they submitted to the governor's office. And Kirk Miller at School Administrators of Montana put that survey together, and he says anecdotally, he's hearing so far that this exercise might really provide clarity on where the digital divide exists within schools.
I'm, you know, reading and talking to people daily that are looking to identify in a very personalized way what kind of access individual students have, both broadband access as well as, you know, equipment at home that would be able to continue with online type system learning, and then those that don't have that kind of access.
Something that I heard from the Great Falls School District is they are not only figuring out who has internet or not, but what speed they may have and if that's adequate for the number of kids they have trying to log on at home. So certainly some useful data for schools and the state to have.
Aaron, thanks for your reporting and for sharing it with us.
Yeah, no problem.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.